You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 8th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Breitbart.com footnote department, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
I bet they had to hire a whole bunch more people for that.
Yeah.
Now that Rand Paul is quote unquote writing
with all the
for Breitbart.com.
Yeah.
What is with him? He really has exposed himself as completely infantile. What's wrong with Rand Paul?
Rand Paul doesn't understand what plagiarism means. He really does. He clearly doesn't. At this point,
there's something more to it than that, though.
Well,
his response is really infantile and
he's
whiny.
Well, think about where he comes from.
I know. Yeah.
Think about his dad.
Yeah.
You know, he's basically Little Joe Cartwright on the Randite Ranch of Galt's Gulch. He's the prince's son. He's the one who's gonna. Like Michael Corleone, he's the one who's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to become president. And he has had this bullshit shoveled into his skull his whole life, that he's blessed, that he's singular, that he's above it all. And like a lot of Republicans, he has really got an incredibly good mastery of the details of the bullshit ideology that he believes in.
Yeah.
So if you talk to a conservative, they will be able to tell you everything that Lyndon Johnson did in 1957, which is why they're not a Democrat.
Right.
But when you ask them anything about 1973, they just look at you like, what the fuck are you talking about? You have no. So
yeah.
Rand Paul has mastered the intricacies of being a libertarian while at the same time being a fundamentalist, which is a weird combination that doesn't make any sense and would make Ayn Rand spin in her grave. But the idiots who follow him don't have any idea who either of those people are, Jesus or Ayn Rand. So
there's something more to it than that in terms of just unprofessional, not caring about his job, throwing a fit. I find it really bizarre that he made it this far and now has this kind of meltdown.
Hey, speaking of Chuck Todd.
You were going to land something on me.
Well, I was just going to – that was not an intended segue, but I watched – as I was really moving at rather astonishing speed for me, a big guy in a small house this morning. But I did listen a little over my shoulder to my man Chuck Todd on liberal MSNBC and listened to him spin this entire counter narrative about Mitt Romney. About how it had to do with Charlie Crist. And believe me, this does have something to do with Rand Paul. So if just bear with me just for a second.
Okay.
His theory of why Mitt Romney lost in 2012 was that Mitt Romney was a moderate governor who was elected twice as a moderate governor of a blue state, you know, like Chris Christie. And the Obama campaign had this tactic of painting him as some sort of extreme guy. That then he sort of let that slide for too long, and there was too big of a hole for him to dig himself out of, which is why the moderate governor of this blue state wasn't able to overcome this incredibly deft tactic, campaign, you know, trick on the part of the Obama administration to paint Mitt Romney. Now, Mitt Romney, anyone who listens to this podcast, or any liberal who didn't just wake up yesterday, followed the 2012 campaign very closely. And Mr. Mitt Romney was the guy who said he was severely conservative.
Yeah.
And Mr. 47%. And the guy who ran right of Ted Cruz on immigration. And on and on and on and on and on. Mitt Romney committed one gaffe after another, after another, after another, bending himself in the direction of being the most radical, extreme person, running away from the only thing he's ever done in his professional life in government, which is Romney Care, to win his party's nomination. Then he was counting on the Etch-a-Sketch strategy, where we'll just hit the undo button and everyone will forget everything I just said and we'll run as a moderate. And if John Fugelsang hadn't asked that question, that might never have come out as an actual shit you never say out loud that his campaign manager said out loud. Yeah, what we're going to do is basically reset everything. Because, you know, the people who followed us during the primaries are basically morons and they'll listen to anything. So we'll just undo what we did and go forward. Today, Chuck Todd proved that whatever that Men in Black memory zapper they give to all the Beltway people actually does, he actually stares directly into it when he hits it, because he has no memory, apparently, of the last year and a half. He is now explaining away Mitt Romney's loss as Obama campaign trickery and strategy or tactics to make Romney appear conservative.
Yep.
Now, what does this have to do with Rand Paul? Rand Paul can expect the same kind of treatment. No matter what, no matter how badly he shits himself in public, people like Chuck Todd will come along to explain it all away and make it go away and spin it away, because they desperately need a both sides narrative. So whoever's on the right, however bad they are, Chuck Todd will be right there to prop them up. That's why I believe Chris Christie's on all the Sunday shows this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He can count on whoever the nominee is whoever is in the power constellation in Washington, and Rand Paul certainly is in that, they can absolutely count on people cleaning up their messes for them.
Yep.
And the media absolutely refusing to hold them to this stuff after it's faded, after they've forced it out of the public memory. So why does he care?
Yeah.
He can crap himself as much as he wants. You know, yep. And nobody's going to remember in a month.
Yep.
Except a bunch of cranky liberals. And every time a cranky liberal brings it up, it's going to be, yeah, but what about Barack Obama IRS scandal, huh? What about that? And at that point, we just throw our hands up and say, fine, fine. One of these days, I will get close enough to Chuck Todd to put a staple gun to the palm of his hand and say, now tell me what's really fucking going on here, or I'm going to staple your hand to the bar. And the sad truth is we know what the answer will be, is my mortgage.
Yeah,
I get paid to say this shit. And the narrative my corporate bosses want to hear is both sides, both sides, both sides. So that's the narrative I'm going to sell.
And also, I just want to get into people's dispositions today, because mm-hmm. I'm going to be apparently the only one this week to say it, although I've been listening for it all week. Chris Christie, in my personal opinion, doesn't have the disposition to be a successful candidate.
No.
For president, period. No. He's a bully and an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to come out that he's a bully and an asshole, because he can't turn that off.
And he's wrong on
He's wrong on lots of issues, but he's too liberal for lots of Republicans.
Right, which makes him a centrist.
And the more they call him a centrist, the more he's mm-hmm. going to just turn off the Tea Party voter who votes in Republican primaries. I just thought Chris Christie's speech was funny.
The I, me, my
speech. First of all, it was very similar to his speech at the Republican National Convention, mm-hmm. which is all about me. Mm-hmm. It's all about me. And it really was. Thank you so much, New Jersey. I love you. I love you. I'm so proud to be your governor. Now, don't let the door hit me on the ass as I spend the next 2 years in Iowa. Bye-bye.
Yeah. And he's off.
It's off. Goodbye.
And
yeah.
Everybody seems to be learning all the wrong lessons from this election.
Here's your tax cuts, billionaires. See ya. Yeah. You know. Is he a centrist, though? That's what I want to know.
Well, he is.
And what if no labels people calling him? They're rushing to call him a centrist.
Right. Well, they have to. They need him to be a centrist. You know, they want him on that centrist wall. They need him on that centrist wall. They have to have somebody in the Republican Party they can point to and say, that guy is the guy.
Both sides. See?
That guy's the guy on that side that you can look at and say, see, if only Democrats would make peace with him and play nice with him and blah, blah, blah. The narrative that the reason we say this is John Avlon has this long piece in the Daily Beast about Chris Christie's win and this astonishing coalition he put together. And basically, from my point of view, shame on Democrats and shame on liberals for voting for the guy in New Jersey. But he goes through all the statistics behind the election, which were all glowing and nice. But then he says that, you know, Christie's the guy who's moving to recenter his party. And I thought, well, that's a really strange way to phrase your assessment of a guy who's, you know, anti-labor, anti-immigration, anti-woman, anti-schools.
Anti-gay, right?
Anti-gay, pro-tax cuts. You know, except for a couple of issues, he's indistinguishable from every other right-wing asshole in the GOP. Mm-hmm. And then I looked up, oh, John Avlon is one of the founders of No Labels. Oh.
You were shocked by that.
Oh. So they have to make up centrist attributes, very much like Aaron Sorkin had to make up fake Republicans to make his show make any sense. People like John Avlon have to make up fake attributes for Republicans to have so that he can say, both sides should cooperate because look how reasonable everybody's being who we agree with. And if there is no such person, they will simply invent one. Now, on the absolute opposite end of that spectrum, as I was driving to the workplace today, I flipped on the radio and I heard Glenn Beck talking to Ann Coulter. And it was
because we live in Southern Illinois and that's what you're going to get on AM radio.
Yeah, because, well, I forget who it is. I think it's Sam Cedar. Okay. But I might be wrong. Who's got this sort of 5-minute challenge. You can turn on Rush Limbaugh during any 5-minute period and hear him just lie.
Yep.
And it's absolutely the case. So I flip on a powerful AM radio station that's blasting all over Central Illinois that's being carried all over the country. Mm-hmm. And I hear Glenn Beck and Ann Coulter talking about what an awesome guy Ken Cuccinelli is and how it's important that he stay in politics, and how he was stabbed in the back
by Republicans, by
establishment Republicans like Orrin Hatch. Uh-huh. Someone needs to get rid of Orrin Hatch. The problem isn't Ken Cuccinelli. The problem is Orrin Hatch and people like Orrin Hatch. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the Venn diagrams here of Chuck Todd's world, mm-hmm. where Mitt Romney wasn't a crazy right-wing guy, that was just trickery. That was just Obama tactics because he just wishes the past away. Just if it's inconvenient to his narrative, he just fucking doesn't tell you about it.
Right.
He just lies about it because he's there to make up fiction that's all centristy and all about the horse race and all about tactics and won't tell you anything about the actual candidates or where they stood or what they said. And so he needs it to be a trick that the Obama administration played on this good moderate man. And over here you have people like Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, Glenn Beck, all giving you the same narrative that Cuccinelli could have won, mm-hmm. and should have won because he's a true blue American and a true blue patriot. But for the fact that liberals something conspired against him and those old bulls in the GOP, those rhinos, stabbed him in the back. Now, these two things have something in common, neither one of which overlap with each other or with reality in any way. So being a liberal means being that third part that observes these things going on. But I don't share anything with Chuck Todd. I think he's just a disgrace to his profession. I think David Gregory is an absolute disgrace to his profession. And I tune in when I do watch or listen to them. I tune in to find out how they are spinning a particular lie today. How are they going to sell centrism today? What's the line on how both sides are equally wrong today? Because that's all they fucking talk about. And on the right, you have nothing but he wasn't conservative enough. And those are the two dominant political narratives that go on in our country. And so to be a liberal is to sort of stand on the moon and observe the earth blowing up. I mean, it's tragic, but it's entertaining as hell. I will say that.
Let's talk about the Virginia gubernatorial race. Because
which was stolen
from Ken Cuccinelli,
from the rightful heir to the throne by Orrin Hatch. So I'm so clear about that. Orrin Hatch stole that election. They sold him out.
Not to get off topic, but Lindsey Graham has decided we need more abortion legislation
to stop Benghazi.
To stop Benghazi, right?
That's great.
Benghazi, which is actually an acronym, better ensure no girl, Hillary, accesses the zone of influence.
Yes.
That's what Benghazi stands for.
It does. Because the Congress literally doesn't do anything these days.
Literally.
And I mean literally.
And I mean that in the Biden sense.
In the Biden sense of literally actually does nothing at all, except the Senate proposes things that are only 3/4 crazy and the House kills them. So that's how government works now. And expect that to be for the next 3 years. This is not going to change at all. This is not going to change for the foreseeable future. This is how we govern now. Until the Republican Party is broken and destroyed, this is how your country works now. And lying about it is how Chuck Todd keeps paying his mortgage. So given that fact, just to make them more efficient, can't we just have an omnibus fuck you Obama bill?
Omnibus fuck you Obama.
Yeah. Just have a giant abortion, we hate jobs, he's a Kenyan, he wasn't born here, and defund Obamacare.
I've been thinking a lot about Chris Matthews, mm-hmm. insisting, and I think quite rightly, first of all, Some of our Facebook fans have said, you know, that they now have a drinking game of their own as to a bet as to how soon Chris Matthews will pimp his book into the show. Will it be three minutes, 5 minutes, 9 minutes at the end? What will it be?
Mm-hmm.
But the insistence that Chris Matthews has now of calling Barack Obama President Obama.
Yeah.
And he doesn't say this, but it occurred to me after I heard that for a lot of people, Obama means the N-word.
Yeah, he sure does.
And it's just that simple, that you don't have to say the N-word anymore, just like we were taught by Lee Atwater.
Yeah, you don't say that anymore. You just say Obama.
You just say Obama, and you're saying it all. So when you're in conversation with people, I know when I went to that trade school up the river, which is what you call it in Massachusetts.
Ah!
You don't ever use the H word to discuss the Ivy League institution.
Oh, it's like the Scottish play. You just
right.
don't say it.
You don't say the name. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you have to say the name, you say Harvard Radcliffe. And that knocks people off of their predisposition to hate you for having gone to Harvard. You say, I went to Harvard Radcliffe.
Mm-hmm.
Harvard Radcliffe, which is Daniel Radcliffe's stupider cousin, right? if you're in conversation with people, if you continually say President Obama did this, if you're having a political conversation,
it really bothers them.
You will not. Yeah. Do not let them say, that Obama, they don't mean that Obama, you know, they don't.
No.
Like saying Democrat Party. Yeah. It's the same thing. So twist it around and say President. You mean the President of the United States?
And speaking of that, and not to be too, you know, I just want to touch on this very lightly and very delicately, but the junior, very, very junior, very crazy junior senator from Texas, apparently yesterday or today, very close to the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, during which you might recall, or you might have heard in the press as they sort of revisit that, all of the right-wing nuttery going on in Texas.
Yeah.
All the wanted all the dead
threats.
Or alive.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All the death threats, all the wanted posters, all of the all the shit that the same crazy fuckers who still run the Republican Party were stirring up back then. And so Ted Cruz decided this would be an excellent time to announce that President Obama's trip to Texas brings nothing with it but broken promises. He promised that America could keep their health care plans. He told premiums would go down, the jobs would be created. And now we know these are all false promises.
Wow.
Yeah. Just stay the hell out of Texas, Mr. President. this is just who they are.
Yeah.
This is what makes a man prosper in conservative movement. I really do wonder sometimes when we look back on slavery. By the way, good news today. Illinois did pass marriage equality.
And the governor signed it?
I don't know if he signed it yet.
But he's promised to sign.
He's promised to sign. So
the Senate, has passed it as of today?
I believe it had passed the Illinois House as of yesterday. The last time I checked.
Yeah, it passed the Illinois House on Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
And the Senate had in its last session passed it.
Yeah.
So I think they had to do a revote.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as if the Illinois Senate changes hands that often.
And I think it was that I went to the protest last week.
Oh, by the way, which side were you on in the protest?
I was on the good guys.
You were pro-marriage, weren't you?
I was pro-marriage.
You're pro-marriage. That's what you are. Pro-marriage.
I'm very, very small-c conservative that way. I'm very pro-marriage, pro-family, like most liberals I know.
Yes.
I'm pro-marriage, pro-family, pro-schools,
yes.
Pro-church. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in evangelizing, but I certainly do believe in the efficacy and power of
community building within a religious institution. Yes.
Thank you. That's that Harvard degree. You know, 50 years from now, people are going to look back on that. And the way they look back on, I kind of hope they look back on the way they look back on interracial marriage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I was talking to, I think, youngest child or middle child about, you know, this thing that I went to. And she asked me about that. And I said, well, I just think that, you know, everybody should have the same rights I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have the right to get married and be happy with your mom and, you know, so forth. I think that everybody who's in love should just have the same thing that I have. And you shouldn't have people who aren't allowed to be happy in that way just because it was something to do with some definition that I think their father prefers, civil union as opposed to marriage.
Yeah.
So we talked about that, but it was essentially, and I had to explain to her in a very sort of, I didn't talk down to children because you should never talk down to children, but I tried to explain that once upon a time, black people and white people weren't allowed to get married.
I remember you saying this. I was in the car with you because we were carrying that gingerbread house over to the church for the Scouts.
And she was unaware that that was true. That just seemed insane.
Yeah, she said that's just crazy.
Yeah. Yes, it is crazy. So I'm kind of hoping, ask, I don't know, a handful of people. I have no Ezra Klein graphs to back this up, but I'm guessing if you asked a handful of people, 30 and under, 25 and under, I'm just going out on a limb. I don't know this for a fact. They would be astonished to learn that once upon a time in the lifetimes of their parents, mm-hmm. black people and white people were not allowed to get married in this country.
Yeah.
And because that seems so long ago and far away and stupid and crazy.
Well, and there's a YouTube video out this week that's kind of long. It's about 15 minutes long called Kids React to Gay Marriage. Uh-huh. And it's a series of kids reacting to different internet memes and so forth. And what they do is show these kids, and they're within the range of youngest child, so 8 or 9 to 15, 16, I would say, reacting to marriage proposals that are on YouTube and very romantic and involved and have a dancing and flash mob look to them. One is a gay couple and another is a lesbian couple where one person is proposing marriage to another. Mm-hmm. And nearly all of the children there, especially the older ones, say, oh, that's so cute. That's so touching. That's so wonderful. That's so awesome. One of the youngest children is not horrified, but is surprised.
Right. Right.
A guy marrying a guy? A girl marrying a girl? That's just something I've never even thought of before. You know, right. And she's very cute the way she opens the gate in her thinking to, uh-huh. is this even possible? You know, and she's adorable the way she's not being homophobic and she's not being nasty. She just
The first time you encounter long division.
Yeah.
What? You can do this with numbers? I never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, really.
And it is. And when you think about it, this is the sort of thing that kind of gives me hope, because I'm very much down on political forgetfulness. Mm-hmm. I think political forgetfulness is the death of political discourse in this country, because people on the right simply forget shit they said yesterday. Mm-hmm. And you can't debate someone who just said, I never voted for Bush. Yeah, you did. Yeah. Fucking lawn signs on your front porch. You know, of course you did not. Never said that. Never believed it. Never believed it for a minute. You can't debate people who deliberately lobotomize themselves and run away from their own positions, especially when they used to scream them in your face. Mm-hmm. That is simply unacceptable. You have to have a Truth and Reconciliation Committee at a minimum. But there is something about a more gentle kind of forgetfulness that it becomes absurd to imagine that people owned people.
Yes.
It becomes ridiculous to think that people wouldn't let black people, white people get married because they were black and white. That's absurd. And what's even more interesting is how ridiculous the defenses of those positions sound when you go back and read them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They sound ridiculous. They sound like
it's like the terrible tension that there was in the evangelical community during the 19th century of, do we teach blacks to read so that they can read the Bible? Because that's, we want them to do that. Right. But if you do that, you're also giving them power on the human scale, on the human level. Not just giving them access to Christianity, which we want them to have, because that'll teach them to be have servitude and be humble and, you know, go along and so forth.
All those virtues we want other people to have.
But there was a lot of tension in the evangelical community about that, you know, because slave owners don't want their slaves to read.
Absolutely.
So,
so there's a certain kind of science fictional notion that I have when I'm getting depressed. I'm very depressed about politics right now. I'm very kind of like, I shrug my shoulders more than I should. Mm-hmm. But I just tend to believe that even 10 years from now, once a lot of Republicans, a lot of much, much older ones just are in homes or have passed away or have just passed out of the political universe, the shouting has gone down. I don't see a sign. And I, just as a brief aside, Newt Gingrich is on CNN, A, pimping a book, and B, decrying partisanship and all the bickering and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, the inventor of modern hate speech in politics, was just shrugging his shoulders and wondering, why are people so angry with each other? What's with all the divisiveness?
We need to have, but well, that's why he's still on TV, is he's able to turn on a dime and lie right into the camera.
Well, but he needs his David Gregory. He needs the person across from him not to ask him any hard questions about anything that he said before today.
The game has to be played that way.
Without his, you know, Bud Abbott, without his straight man. I'm sorry, Bud Abbott was not the straight man. Yes, he was. Without his straight man there, his act doesn't work. So that's why you have to keep Chuck Todd and David Gregory and George Snuffleupagus employed to continue to let these people act as if they have credibility. Yeah. But I got to believe that 10 years from now, or sooner, I would hope, retrospectively explaining to people who aren't living through this nightmare that once upon a time, a center-right African-American was elected president on the Democratic Party, under the Democratic Party, and he tried to put forth a lot of Republican ideas, or at least tried really hard to get them to cooperate on solving some problems that everyone can now agree were really, really, really bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he kept offering olive branch after olive branch after olive tree after olive acre, and he just gave the store away over and over again to try to get them to just agree with him a little bit. And rather than do that, they ran around in circles with their hair on fire, screaming that he wasn't a real American, that he was an African, that he was a Marxist, that he was a monster for 8 fucking years. And these people, the crazy nut job people, were not a fringe group. This was the Republican Party. And they did it for 8 solid years, and they kept getting put on television as if they weren't crazy. And I got to believe at some point in the future, telling a child that story will elicit the same kind of, you got to be shitting me, reaction. Yeah. Really? Americans were that friggin' stupid? My parents were that dumb to buy this shit? I mean, they didn't see through this instantly? And the answer is no. They're not seeing through it instantly because, this is why I asked to put this in the, because of racing thoughts.
Yeah, yeah.
And
then we're going to get back to Virginia. But go ahead and talk about racing thoughts because you're right into that.
Because I have them from time to time. And some of our podcasters know, my wife certainly knows, that I have occasional panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I have much fewer of them now that I'm happily married. But I am afflicted with the occasional 2 a.m, OMG, what if terrible things happen?
And I wish you would have woken me up the other night when you had that.
Well, you know, that's that you were there.
I was there, but I was out.
So. That was enough. But I am occasionally afflicted with, and part of my brain knows that I'm just, that there's a good reason for some of these things. I mean, you know, we've been through some economic hard times and we've been through some other hard times and the future is, you know, iffy. Mm-hmm. So it's not like these are unsubstantiated.
Well, and we're uninsured at the moment.
Yeah.
For another couple of months until we get Obamacare settled.
Yeah.
So we're one of those people that's going to need that. Now, the children are covered, but we're not. So
we're not. And that's. So there are, you know, there's a lot of ways for our situation to go wrong in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And we're being very careful not to let that happen. Everything that's under our control, we control. And believe me, we're always looking for new ways to increase our revenues. But
You should thank everyone that contributed to your fundraising.
Oh, I'm going
past
to.
Month. It was wonderful.
If I hadn't been running like mad for the last 3 days, and if Amtrak hadn't denied me the 7 hours of Wi-Fi they owe me, I would be all caught up. But
love Amtrak, but the Wi-Fi there was down. Yes,
both ways.
Yeah,
that 7 hours of correspondence I had planned to make and wasn't able to make. But the point being, there are reasonable reasons to have sort of racing thoughts at 2 a.m. There's a kernel of truth to each one of them, but they run out of control. And part of my brain goes, this is silly. You should shut this down. This is obviously your motor's running at way, way too fast. You have to dial this down. This is absurd, but it's inducing all the symptoms of panic. I can't shut it down because it's running out of control. By definition, I can't shut it down. And I'm thinking about mortgage and future and money and health and all the things that scare people. But I can't imagine what it would be like to have those kind of thoughts, uncontrollable racing terrors.
Yep.
Over the Kenyan usurper.
Yeah, yeah.
To wake up in the morning or go to bed at night just abjectly terrified that a secret colonial Marxist Negro had taken over my country and was actively working every day to destroy everything I believed in. Because that is, in fact, what those people believe, and that gives them night sweats. And that terrifies them. And then, what to make matters worse, I get up in the morning if I haven't, as I said, much fewer of these than I used to when I was living in Chicago. Marriage works, gentlemen. Or women. Whoever you have to marry, get married quick as you can. But do it out of love.
We did, yeah.
We sure as hell did. It has medicinal value as well. I'm just saying that.
It lowers our blood pressure.
It really does.
Physically lowers our blood pressure to be together. Actually, when I go to the doctor to get my blood pressure taken, I hold your hand. And yeah. It just gives me a better reading.
It does.
It really does.
That's just science, Blue Guy.
That's just science.
But I don't, when I get up in the morning having, you know, freaked out or had some sort of, you know, insomnia or panic attack over being broke or I'll never work again or whatever, I'll never have a full-time job again. There isn't a TV network that tells me all day long, you're right.
You're right.
You're doomed. Yeah. Everything that scared the shit out of you last night is absolutely true. And what's more, it's worse than you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what conservatives have. Not only do they have these night terrors over these paranoid, irrational, delusional thoughts, but they have an entire media network set up to amplify and feed back their night terrors to them every fucking day. That's why debating with them is largely a waste of your time, because you're not debating with Hunter Thompson says you can turn your back on a person, but you can't turn your back on a drug.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can turn your back on a person, but you can't turn your back on a paranoid nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're living every day of their life. And trying to reason with that is really kind of pointless.
Yeah.
At this point. So that's why I focus on going after the center, the people who tell them that their position is real because the other side is just as bad. Anyway, back to Virginia.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was very sweet. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Virginia governor's race because actually Virginia and New Jersey are in many ways just flip sides of, opposites of each other in that Chris Christie was reelected and maintains a Democratic supermajority in his state legislature. And in Virginia, Terry McAuliffe is now faced with a supermajority Republican state legislature.
Uh-huh.
And Chris Christie has pretended to work with his legislature, all the while getting his vetoes overridden, either by the voter in the case of the minimum wage hike,
uh-huh,
or the legislature in terms of gay marriage.
Yeah.
And now what it's clear to me that Terry McAuliffe, that people held their nose and voted for Terry McAuliffe to stop the Virginia legislature, which they cannot apparently change, from continuing to be as crazy as they are, especially on reproductive rights.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I wanted to point out is that the Republicans, both in Virginia and in Texas and in lots of other places, are turning married white women
uh-huh
into pro-choice activists, which they really don't necessarily want to be.
Right. They're all Homer Simpson, you know?
Right.
Women will like what I tell them to like.
They'll like what I tell them to like. They'll like this makeup gun that shoots them in the face, right?
Uh-huh.
But married white women, you know, speaking for myself as a 50-year-old married white woman who sends her children to Sunday school and is very involved in church and on and on. And I'm a liberal. I mean, I fall outside that Venn diagram every once in a while, but I am certainly not in my day-to-day life thinking about, gosh, I better make sure I have a right to an abortion. I'm not going to have any more children. I know that for a fact.
Really?
That ship has sailed, honey. Yeah.
Because that's what Abraham thought. And yet.
Oh, yeah. Sarah didn't have her tubes done.
That's true. Yeah. No tubal ligation in the Bible, people.
Ligation in the Bible.
Saying.
So, I mean, and I'm very interested in reproductive rights for my daughters, for everyone else in my community, for everyone else in my country.
Mm-hmm.
And I would vote that way. But that was the number one issue among Terry McAuliffe voters in this election. And that's just not something you want to see if people are voting against you over an issue. You don't want them moving down the list that far.
No.
To grab the most important thing. And I wanted to point out that this has happened before.
When, Blue Gal?
This happened back in 1917.
Wait a minute. Just to clarify for our listeners, not only does my wife have a theology degree from Radcliffe. Harvard Radcliffe. But you also have a history degree, don't you?
Yeah. I have a teaching degree from University of Alabama, Birmingham, and I have a bachelor's degree in history, U.S. history from Brandeis. So, suck at people who aren't me. I've got lots of letters after my name in the unemployment line. Absolutely.
See? Deal with it, people.
One of my heroines is Alice Paul, and she was badass. She was just badass. And she was a suffragette, but...
Oh, not Ron Paul's mother?
No, not Ron Paul's mother. She was not Ron Paul's mother. She was a suffragette who fought for suffrage in England and went to prison and went on hunger strike and came to the United States. The prison where she was placed in Washington, D.C., she was doing a 7-month sentence in jail for picketing the White House. That was her crime.
Wow. Now, you're trying to tell me two crazy things I just can't believe. First of all, the protesters were once thrown in jail rather than given
7 months. Yeah.
For 7 months rather than being given for protesting White House actions, rather than being given $250 million media enterprise to run. They were thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Back in 1917. Oh, my goodness. I don't know what to make of that. And you seem to be suggesting that women didn't always have the right to vote, Blue Gal.
All right. She and six other women were arrested, serving time for the same offense. Mm-hmm. And the men in this prison were given milk, eggs, exercise, and newspapers. And the women were given salt pork and cabbage.
Oh.
And no exercise. And she was apparently suffering from the air in the prison, and it was filthy. And she felt that she should have the same kind of food as the murderers in the jail, and she didn't. And so she went on hunger strike, which she also did in England. they thought that she'd get hungry enough to eat again, and they did. Boy, did they underestimate her. She was only 9 pounds to begin with, and they force-fed her raw eggs with a funnel. And after that, she just didn't give a fuck. She really, when you've been bullied or when you've been tortured or when you have suffered that much for what you believe in, at that point, it's like, yeah, you think you're going to hurt me anymore?
Yeah.
Either.
What is that phrase?
They'll torture you until you die or until they're ashamed.
Yes.
To see you surviving.
Yes. Yeah.
So you might as well just go with it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how she was. She just fine, you know? And after that, after she was released, Woodrow Wilson, everybody wants to, that's the one thing where I agree with Glenn Beck. I've mentioned this before. Woodrow Wilson was a terrible president. I know he was a Democrat and a progressive and so forth, but he was terrible on race relations and he was terrible on women's rights. And he would not condemn or pass laws regarding lynching. And he would not, he really resisted suffrage for women, except in the West. And in the West, they wanted women to settle the West.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that new states out West gave women in Nebraska and other states was the right to vote in order to attract them to settle in unsettled areas. So Alice Paul went out West and told all the women voters out there to vote Republican. And she made it clear, and I want to make it clear, too, that, you know, I probably, having been back there, might have been horrified that at her lack of party discipline.
Yes.
Because, and I can just hear all the drone people going, aha, Blue Gal, you're holding a double standard here, because if someone wants to vote third party over drones or anything else or resist Obama, you get mad at them. And that's, that is a good cop. I understand that.
And let's all remember this was a century ago.
Well, it was. It's the same principle. You know, the same principle is... And she got Woodrow Wilson's attention.
Yes.
By saying, look, you know, we're going to make you lose the House of Representatives if you don't do what we want. And that's how you play politics sometimes.
Well, let me I agree with you completely about how you play politics. Mm-hmm. I would point out that since then, we have been through a couple of wars.
Yeah.
A couple of big ones.
The consequences of giving the Senate to the Republicans at this point would be, well, how disastrous would that be, do you think?
Well, let me tell you.
They're already stopping everything. They're already stopping all the appointments, the court appointments that Obama wants to make.
Let me cite a recent example. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go over the entire history of Republicans for the last 40 years. It's boring. Yeah. But starting with, Reagan running up deficits, mm-hmm. Iran-Contra, rigging elections through the U.S. attorneys, mm-hmm. torture, Iraq, massive tax cuts for rich people, massive impoverishment of the poor, trying to roll back the New Deal, relentlessly trying to roll everything back to basically when Woodrow Wilson was president.
And let's face it, voter suppression.
Yeah, and voter suppression.
Which Alice Paul would have a problem with.
Yeah.
Especially in Texas where, married women mm-hmm. are being told that there's a problem with their ability to vote.
Well, and her issue mm-hmm. was voting.
Yeah.
And therefore, she was urging people to exercise their franchise.
Right.
To force people to allow them to have more access to the polling place.
Right, because in New York and other eastern states, women couldn't vote.
But what happened? What would she have done, for example, if both parties were equally anti-suffragette?
Yeah, I don't know.
If in her case, if the other party actually has your interests at heart, mm-hmm. or the other party, I voted Republican before, I voted for John Anderson before.
Yeah.
But if the other party has some more of your interests at heart than the one you're affiliated with, mm-hmm. go with them. If the other party is more pliable and is willing to be moved in the direction you wish it to move, go join them. But the idea that as Glenn Greenwald promulgated in 2010, after the Tea Party won in 2010, mm-hmm. he did a long Q&A session, and I have this up at my blog somewhere, where he was delighted. He was delighted with the Tea Party. He was delighted they came to rallies with machine guns. He was delighted they used physical intimidation and intimidating language to, I believe I'm direct quoting, genuinely terrify, put genuine fear into legislators, because that's what drives them. That's what makes them respond. He was hoping that his movement would emulate them in that it would strike genuine mortal fear into lawmakers. And he said, what needs to happen to make my revolution happen is a lot more Democrats need to lose.
Yeah.
And a lot more Tea Partiers, like the ones who just swept into power, need to be elected. And I think looking back over the last 2 years, that is the single stupidest piece of political advice anybody could give. That if you care about any of these issues that you allege to care about, and I'm talking about outside of the strictly NSA and drones, if you care about women's rights, reproductive rights, health care, voting rights, poor people, any of those things, the idea that you would give Ken Cuccinelli more power mm-hmm. Means to making your revolution is such an incredibly craven, stupid,
right.
infantile,
a
petulant way of thinking about politics.
Yep.
That it just astonishes me that a grown person with a law degree who commands a lot of respect would say such a thing and be not you could say that in 1917.
We have to remember who the Democrats were in 1917 and who the Republicans were as well.
Absolutely.
That's really important. And she was force-fed and to the point of really doing – they did harm to her.
Yeah. Physically. Oh, no. This is
–
But this is the danger of comparing historical –
Yes. Epoch. Right.
If your issue is one which – again, if the other party is going to move in your direction, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. go join them. But the idea that if you care about women's rights, that throwing your weight to Ken Cuccinelli is a great way to shift.
That's a way to get a Barack Obama's attention for your issue.
That'll work. That's a brilliant fucking idea. And then when they get into office and they just obstruct everything, they just shut the government down and say, we're doing this because the government's evil and it should be shut down. To feign surprise that, no, this is what you wanted. This is the pizza you ordered. So why don't you take a nice big bite of it? Because this is what you wanted. Now you have it. Now why don't you explain to all of us stupid obots how foolish we were and that really what you need is just a little bit more radical, a few more Cuccinellis, and eventually your great libertarian revolution will come to pass. Or you could shut up about things you know nothing about and go back to reporting things that are actually important, which I think Mr. Greenwald does on occasion. Anyway, that's my soapbox.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. But getting back to today and Virginia.
Yes, please.
I just wanted to add, you know, one of the things that people criticize the suffragette movement for is their racism. And that is a perfectly reasonable criticism to make of the suffragette movement. Mm-hmm. For putting women at the black women at the back of the parade, not letting them join certain parties and certain groups, being all white.
Labor movement can be said to be the same way.
Yeah.
Yep.
But there is something to be said about married middle class white women.
Yeah.
And that is, you don't want them to be activated against you the way the Republican Party has done this.
Yes.
It's really bad. And anyone who was not in a bubble of patriarchy, as they are, would get that. Mm-hmm. Someone needs to shake them up and say, you are really doing major damage to yourself.
Yeah.
Because this particular group has a little extra money. They have a sense of privilege, whether you like it or not. They do have a sense of education and privilege. Mm-hmm. They have spare time.
Yep.
And perhaps most importantly of all, this is true in 1917 as well. They have intellectual energy that is waiting to be tapped by someone.
Yep.
There's a reason that there are NPR book clubs.
Uh-huh.
And it's educated, mostly white women who have time to read books, time to watch politics, and really don't want to be, I think a lot of them don't want to be, activist, feminist.
No.
Pro-choice.
No.
Railing against the patriarchy. You know, these married women in Texas, they're Texans, they're married, and they change their names, and you're fucking with them?
Right. They've given you enough. Why are you doing that? Well, it's because that's because your ideology takes you there. It forces, you know, the logic of your ideology makes it necessary that you stomp on these people too.
And that you stomp as big a way as possible. And if there is collateral damage to people that might vote with you, so be it, because you have to take power this way.
But it's pure. You got to be pure. You got to have your and what they also have, and this actually does get to a sense of privilege, but it's what I think all three of the kids have, which is a sense of fearlessness.
Yeah.
They just think that it's okay to go up to any adult and ask him any question.
Well, and that is a class issue. There's been a lot of studies done about that, particularly children in pediatricians' offices. That children in pediatricians' offices that come from a middle-class or upper-middle-class background are trained to treat the doctor as either an assistant to them to help them maintain health, or as a servant to help them maintain health. And so children will talk to their pediatrician and say, and they have been taught to do this by their mothers.
Yep.
Tell him what's wrong. Tell him how you feel. Tell him how you want this to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And take authority in this examination room and control over your health, because you can tell the doctor about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Poor children treat the doctor as an authority figure.
Yeah.
And they do not speak up. They do not speak. And the parents don't have that skill in their skill set.
Right.
To say, go ahead, tell the doctor what you want. Tell the doctor how you're feeling. Tell the doctor what you had for breakfast. It's much less of a
it's more deferential.
Much more deferential and much less collegial.
Mm-hmm.
We treat upper middle class people and middle class people and educated people teach their children to treat their doctor as a colleague in the project of keeping them healthy.
And when it comes to
politics or activism or needing to stand up and say, like that young 14-year-old girl said, she did that speech about, wow, you're not going to have pre-registration of high school students at 17. What is wrong with you? This is my right. She had, you know, raise a child up until they're seven and that they're mine for life. Isn't that what I hate? Yep. I think Hitler said that.
It was the Catholic Church, I believe, but yes.
Catholic Church. Some.
It works. It works. Wherever it comes from, it works just fine.
She had been taught to speak up from the day she was born.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one will stop you. And our children know that. Yes, absolutely.
And a very clear sense of what you're entitled to in a positive sense of entitlement, that it is acceptable you are allowed to go up to that person and ask them a question and demand an answer.
Yep.
And you're
allowed to say, this is not fair.
Yes.
Here's what I think is fair. And children have a very strong sense of fairness.
And when you have a whole lot of middle-class white women who are that way.
Yeah.
And feel, you know, they live in a bubble. They do live in a little kind of a very privileged, closeted environment.
And to the point that very often they are not aware, we are not aware of just how much privilege we have.
But break into that environment.
Yep.
And start screwing with their stuff. And you will awaken a giant.
Yeah.
The slumbering giant will turn on you.
I've been thinking about that because that was the whole Tea Party thing. Yeah. Was you've wakened the sleeping giant.
No.
I thought, no, you have no idea what the sleeping giant is until you start messing around with white women.
You just convinced the same old Republican assholes who've been assholes for 30 years to put on funny hats and yell louder. And yell about the Constitution as opposed to calling liberals traitors for not supporting George Bush. That's it. You change the script slightly and you turn the volume up a little bit. But there's nothing new about the people involved. But once you screw with middle class...
And let's face it, the difference between the women who voted for pro-abortion stands in Virginia and the Tea Party women from 3 or 4 years ago is not that different in terms. There is a class difference, but there is not a it is married white women still.
Yeah.
The Tea Party, the backbone of the Tea Party is women on the Internet.
The backbone of everything is women, except for except for the real radical anti-abortion organizers seem to be mostly really twisted white men.
Yeah. I wanted to just add to our conversation about the progressive movement and women's suffrage and so forth and so on. And the NAACP came to power and prominence during that period, the Woodrow Wilson administration.
Mm-hmm.
The parallels between now and the progressive movement are many. And like the progressives of the beginning of the 20th century, we are up against almost exactly. It's amazing that we are up against exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
that they were
monopolies, organized money.
Yeah. Monopolies, big money, organized money, big business, concentrated power. In many cases, corrupted power. I'm thinking about insurance companies in particular.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that, we as progressives aren't going to get everything we want, and we're not going to even agree with each other as to what the most important goals are. So it's going to be just as messy on the left in terms of how we go about accomplishing what we want to accomplish as it was in the 19th century or early 20th century.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we have going for us is also exactly the same in that we are advocating for the health, safety, and prosperity of the average American person.
Yes.
So progress and history are on our side. And it may be discouraging to have to fight these battles again, but we always have to fight these battles. So,
you were
going to ask me a question about progressivism.
Yeah, what was organized religion doing?
Well, there was the social gospel, which said that it was your responsibility to help the poor. But there were also people that felt that that the true womanhood was considered, put women on a pedestal and sequester them in homes. And that was the ideal, was Christianity and domesticity were the ideal feminine. And the suffragette movement was just an anathema to what true womanhood was supposed to be.
Because the good Christian household was God at the head of the table with Jesus and then the man.
And then the man, woman as the servant. Yep. Right.
And that still exists in a lot of fundamentalist households, submitting to your husband.
Yes.
But I don't recall. This is where I think things got a little scrambled.
People did try to apply the Bible to racial tensions, slums, child labor, and so forth. And there were many people who were theologically liberal saying, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven," is a call to action.
Right.
And so they didn't believe that the second coming could happen until we solve the problem of poverty. I mean, that's sort of where that was where the theology came from.
A liberation theology, it sort of grew out of that a little bit. Yeah, the idea that God wants you to be a radical.
And wants you to be free. Wants poor people to be free. Yeah, yeah.
But the there was not this alignment between fundamentalism.
Mm-hmm.
Literal inerrant fundamentalism, the creationist vision of the world, was behind slavery, was behind segregation, was behind Jim Crow. The people who cling to that book at that level of desperation and literalism all cite scripture to justify every terrible thing they've ever done.
Right.
And there were quite a few Bible banging people on the left too.
Yes.
Who were just as, in some cases, I'm thinking of William Jennings Bryan, who did not want us crucified on a cross of gold.
Exactly.
But was also the major player in the Scopes trial. So there was a slightly different alignment of faith and economics than there is now. You did not have.
Well, not if you ask Scalia, there isn't.
Well, yeah. Nobody's asking Scalia.
No, everybody's asking Scalia.
the way that the right has reorganized itself to claim not just the plutocrats, mm-hmm. but the neo-Confederates and the right-wing fundamentalists, they're all in the same camp. And there is a debate. I promised I would do this, and I never got around to it, but I will. I promise. There's a debate that took place in April or May, I think, between David Brooks and some other person who I can't remember. And Ralph Reed and Laura Ingraham, I think.
Yeah, Laura Ingraham.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's the conservatives talking among each other and David Brooks pleading for everybody to be more like David Brooks so they can attack filthy liberals like me from a united position. And Laura Ingraham and Ralph Reed, who he keeps referring to as his friends and his colleagues, and, you know, just trying to reestablish that sense of comedy. But them saying, no, we are the real conservatives. You're the ones who are not. We keep telling you we're the real heart of conservatism. You need to shut up and join us because we're the ones who have the one true faith. But there's a moment where David Brooks's partner in the debate, again, whose name I can't remember, throws up his hands and says, well, you know, if this continues, we're just going to have a whole bunch of little parties. And he names off the Gun Nut Party, the Neo-Confederate Party, mm-hmm. the Hate Woman Party, the Anti-Abortion Party. And he names, you know, five or six or seven groups that are just the dregs of society. And clearly he was trying to say, this is our base.
Single issue politics is our base. And
the single issues they have are pretty horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we got to keep them together because if we don't sort of establish this platonic ideal of, you know, we're going to have the philosopher kings of the Republican Party unite the dregs, but we're not going to let them rule anything because that's just crazy. If we let them start running shit, then people will see us for what we really are, which is basically gun nuts, fundamentalists, bigots, morons, Bible thumpers, and plutocrats.
Right.
As opposed to the Republican Party.
And we don't have the coolant, as you have mentioned many times. Yeah.
And that's the thing that is different about this time around.
Yeah.
All of those forces weren't interlinked with each other through a series of think tanks, very big money, billionaires pouring money into it, and so forth.
Yeah.
But you're right. The battle lines are remarkably similar to the way they were a century ago.
And I want to remind you of something, Driftglass.
Yeah.
We are not broke.
No. We're not.
This week's We Are Not Broke.
Oh, you and I are, but...
We are, but...
But as a country,
we're... We as a collective nation are not broke.
No, not even close.
Let's talk about Representative Rodney Frelinghuysen.
Hey! Are you sure that's not...
New Jersey.
Is that something Jerry Lewis made up to make a funny sound?
No, it's not. It does sound like a Jerry Lewis character.
I heard my Frelinghuysen!
Mm-hmm. He is being suggested as the new chairman of the Defense Subcommittee of the House.
Oh, that's good.
He's ranked by roll call as the 18th wealthiest congressman, and he is the ranking Republican on the Defense Subcommittee, but the chairman, Representative Bill Young, passed away recently. We're sorry about that. And now Frelinghuysen is being suggested. It might be Frelinghuysen. It's H-U-Y-S-E-N. He's being suggested as the new chairman. And guess who his top Political Action Committee contributors are?
Let me guess. Planned Parenthood.
No.
The National Poverty Campaign.
No. The employees of Northrop Grumman Corporation Political Action Committee.
Oh.
The Lockheed Martin Corporation Employees Political Action Committee. Honeywell International Political Action Committee. Raytheon Company Political Action Committee. And United Technologies Corporation Political Action Committee.
Yeah.
Since 1982, Rodney Frelinghuysen, Republican of New Jersey, has received $627,100 from defense political action committees.
And earn every penny.
Yeah.
And
they are limited as to how much they can give, but they max out.
Yeah. Well, you max out and you bundle and you get every employee to give $117,000, whatever the limit is.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, it's legalized bribery. And
he's only the 18th richest congressman, too, in the whole Congress.
That must make him very sad.
I bet his wife is pushing him to move that number up, Rodney.
Honey, look, if you're not the lead sled dog, the view never changes.
The view never changes, and I'm behind 17 other congresswomen.
I'm looking up a couple of millionaires' asses right now, and that's not making me feel good.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's how we measure worth in this country, right? Value, worth, all those things.
Yeah, is being ranked by roll call.
Yeah.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Molly, and Molly is a lovely calico girl. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you, and it's kind of funny. The people that contribute to us regularly by P.O. Box, we have few enough of those that I know all of them.
Yeah, it is kind of funny.
And a couple of them sent you birthday cards.
Did.
With a little contribution slipped inside.
He did.
Paul, and I knew his last name.
Yep.
And then the other one was Sonia.
Right.
And Sonia's out west.
Uh-huh.
And I knew where she lived and her last name. And so thank you both, Paul and Sonia, for the birthday cards. I know you appreciated that.
I immensely, yes. Thank you.
It's just funny that we're that intimate. So
yeah.
Thank you. Glad to know you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so feel free to write us at any address, anytime, email U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air.
And although my sound editor is going to make this sound absolutely smooth, we are recording this on two separate days because of a really crazy week. Next week's going to be even crazier. But there was a lot of fast breaking news in the last 12 hours that we will get to next week once it sorts itself out. But suffice it to say, Chuck Todd is still a dick.
Todd is such a dick. How anyone ever trust you again after you lied about those WMDs? Oh, I mean those insurance policies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This says the guy who just 2 months ago said it wasn't his
job. His responsibility. Job to fact check anybody? Yeah. Okay.
Well, my theory is they're just waiting for Luke Russert to start growing facial hair to get rid of Chuck Todd. Yeah.
As soon as he can grow a goatee.
Yeah. Chuck Todd's gone.
I want to be able to tell the difference, and they'll just swap him out real quick.
Isn't Chuck Todd's smirk slightly larger than usual? Yeah. That's young Luke Russert.
He's mentioning John Boehner more often. Yeah.
And the Benghazi.
That's possible.
And the Benghazi story has gone south.
As we mentioned. In some quarters.
Yeah.
In the reality-based community, the Benghazi story's gone south. Yeah.
The CBS blockbuster eyewitness, blah, 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 apparently kind of went up in smoke.
Never let it go.
But on the upside, Blue Gal, it's good to see Jerry Dantana getting work.
All right.
Yeah.
Feel free to write us. Be aware if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties were pleasantly surprised to get a congratulatory phone call from Joe Biden. Congressman Internet Kitty. You did it, buddy. You did it.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Well, Real Kevin is welcome to ask me questions.
Real Kevin asks us questions all the time. And he would like to know, What would the TV show The West Wing look like if it was reimagined to focus on a Republican president?
In space? Because that's easy to answer. That would be Battlestar Galactica.
And now we're on to science fiction. Yeah.
That's an interesting question. Aaron Sorkin had to basically invent reasonable Republicans to make that show go.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were plenty of people that in that show, they shut the government down. They held the government hostage. But there was always, you know, the Speaker of the House was played by John Goodman, as I recall, came in to take over the reins of power when the president's daughter was kidnapped and the vice president had something going on, a sex scandal or something. So it was a moment where Speaker of the House takes over. And he was gun-toting, conservative, right-wing John Goodman. But their big concern was that he wasn't unreasonable, that when he made his speech, he looked presidential. Now, that's what freaked everybody out. But there was always... There were these Republicans who were running basically Clinton-era witch hunts to try to take down the White House, because that's what Republicans do. But there were also reasonable Republicans who would make little speeches about how this is why good people hate us.
Mm.
We have to stop doing this. We can win on the arguments. And then those people would be thrown out. So even in the 90s, Aaron Sorkin had to make up reasonable Republicans out of whole cloth, almost, to imagine them. So I would kick it back to Kevin and say, what sort of Republican are you talking about?
Ah.
Are you talking about a Lincoln-esque? Because go see Lincoln. That would be the answer to your question. Or Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yeah, which is also not a bad movie.
No, actually, it's not. It uses its material very effectively. And it's, you know, it's not anything you should pay any amount of money to go see on a large screen with smell-o-vision or anything, but... It does what it's supposed to do, and it does it really well. But I would say if you're talking about an imaginary, reasonable, conservative Republican that Alan Alda played in The West Wing, you'd get essentially Barack Obama. And it wouldn't be that hard. It would be essentially The West Wing with a slightly greater emphasis on tax cuts and market reforms and slightly less emphasis on social programs. It would be essentially the same show. If you're talking about crazy, actual, real Republicans as they exist now, it would be a disaster. Mm-hmm. It would be, I mean, this is why, not to be go all Godwin's Law on you, but this is why so many jokes were made about Downfall.
Yes.
The bunker scenes in Downfall during the last days of the Bush administration, because they were clearly insane. They were moving imaginary armies around they didn't have. Steve Gilliard famously didn't coin the phrase, because it's not original to him, but he brought the phrase out of the history books that Steiner will save them. And Steiner was the imaginary army that Hitler kept deploying that didn't exist.
Uh-huh.
That we'll get Army Group Steiner to come up and regroup, and then everything will be fine while the Russians are, you know, 1,000 yards away. And so I think you'd have to really get a Republican administration somewhere in the middle or the beginning. And you have to imagine it to be a completely different kind of Republican Party than exists now. So, again, I ask, do you mean in space?
And I've got 8 questions for you.
A or eight?
Eight. Eight, oh, is my. Eight is enough. These are from examiner.com. And they're classic science fiction questions, classic science fiction movies. Let's see how many of these you see.
I will decide what is a classical science fiction.
All right.
Classic science
fiction. We'll see if you get these right.
Okay.
Number one.
Yeah.
Which of the following classic science fiction films is not, repeat, not based on a British television series?
Oh, no.
A, The Crawling Eye. B, The Creeping Unknown. C, Enemy from Space. Or D, The Day the Earth Caught Fire.
The Day the Earth Caught Fire.
Correct. Number two. Atomic radiation mutates a normal life form, causing it to grow into gigantic proportions and threatens the entire world. Is a description for all of the following classic 1950s films, except...
The pollution monsters didn't get big. They just got nasty. But
there's one in this that does not apply to.
Okay.
A, Tarantula.
Yeah.
B, Them.
Yep.
C, The Black Scorpion, or D, Monster from Green Hell.
I would go with Monster from Green Hell.
No, it's Black Scorpion.
Black Scorpion? Okay. Because yes. They or Them was Peter Graves saves Chicago from giant crickets.
Number three, which of the following actors starred in the most science fiction films during the 1950s?
Clint Eastwood.
Kenneth Toby, Richard Carlson, John Agar, or Les Tremaine?
Les Tremaine.
No, John Agar. He starred in 8 science fiction films during the 1950s.
Did I list them?
No. Which of the following science fiction films, all directed by Byron Bunny Haskin, was not produced by the legendary George Pal?
Ooh, okay.
Conquest of Space, Robinson Crusoe on Mars, The Power, or War of the Worlds?
War of the Worlds.
Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Okay. I thought
1964.
I played myself false. I could have sworn that I read, which I found hard to believe, in this book that someone sent me, that George Pal didn't direct War of the Worlds. But
didn't produce it. Oh, okay.
Obviously I was wrong. So my brain plays tricks on me. I'm doing about as well this trivia contest.
There's only six of them. I'm sorry. I thought there were 8. There's 6 questions here.
I'm doing just as well at this trivia contest as the one we went in last week.
All right, I want to see how you do on this one without giving you options.
Okay.
In the classic science fiction movie Forbidden Planet 1956,
yes.
What is the name of Dr. Morbius's wife?
Ooh, Mrs. Morbius. It's not Robbie, and it's not Altera.
All right, I'll read them to you, the options. Helen Benson, Kay Lawrence, Julia Marzen, or Becky Driscoll?
I have no idea.
It's Julia Marzen. All right.
Okay.
And the last one. Which of the following classic Jack Arnold science fiction films was not made for Universal International? Boy, that's a tough one. Is it It Came from Outer Space, The Space Children, The Incredible Shrinking Man, or Revenge of the Creature?
The Incredible Shrinking Man. You notice how I said that with complete confidence? As I shot entirely in the dark, I have no idea.
It is The Space Children, which was made for Paramount.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
I can guarantee you I saw all of those or most of those at some point when I was 8 and enjoyed them thoroughly and completely forgot every single thing about all of them except a
Black
few. Clearly,
yeah.
Clearly, I forgot that... Well, see, Dr. Morbius on Forbidden Planet, his wife is long dead.
I see.
And buried somewhere along with the rest of the survivors. And just his daughter survived. So I'm sure they mentioned in passing.
She's a hot babe. The daughter's a hot babe.
Yeah. His daughter is, what's her name? With the little birthmark. Anne Francis?
Yeah, no, something like that.
But, and that was when Leslie Nielsen played straight roles.
Straight roles, and he's the hero, and he's the space hero. He's a hero in space.
And it's a way cool movie. You know,
it is.
You haven't seen it. It's,
like,
it,
go see.
It does hold up.
Go see that one. It's good.
Yeah.
Also, in The Black Scorpion, I wanted to point out, that's from 1957. The scorpions are not exposed to radiation. They are released by volcanic activity.
Oh.
Which is the other way that, you know, dangerous.
So it's a Scientology movie.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everybody.
Probably better than Battlefield Earth, no matter what it is. So
send your science fiction trivia questions to mrs.driftglass@gmail.com. And thank you very much.
Yeah.